Welcome to Library Voices SC. This is Curtis Rogers, Communications Director at the South Carolina State Library. And today we are fortunate to have in our studio Monifa Lemons, who is a poet, and she's going to introduce herself because she's a lot of different things. So welcome.
Thank you so much. I do appreciate it. Yeah.
So other than a poet, what else do you call yourself?
Oh, yeah. So I'm a poet. I am also a writer. I'm doing some short stories now and getting into some fiction writing and also some nonfiction writing. But my biggest job in the literary arts community is I am the co-founder and co-director of the Watering Hole Poetry Organization, which was founded here in Columbia, South Carolina, by me and my business partner, Candace Wiley. She's a professor up at Clemson. She's in Greenville now. But we both got together and started the Watering Hole. We're in our fifth year. Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, when you said up at Clemson, that reminded me. I went a couple of years back to the Clemson Literary Festival.
Oh, yeah.
And I went to, there was some kind of little dive bar or something. And and it was really interesting because you and your colleagues were there. I think it was maybe five of you. And you looked out, and it was a sea of white faces, standing room only. And here you and your colleagues, five African-Americans who were doing poetry. And I was floored. It was amazing. You know, it was so wonderful.
Yeah, that was, first, I have to really just stop and thank Clemson University. Not only did they give us that opportunity last year, they let us do a slam this year, which is first in the literary festival at Clemson. That was so scary to me.
Why was it scary?
Because, you know, you go to, most times you go to university, you go to campus, you expect to see some black faces. And Clemson, the Literary Fest, that room was so white. And I was like, well, here we go. So we had invited some other, the Watering Hole is for poets of color. We unapologetically provide continuing education for the written word and spoken word, but for poets of color. So our fellows are all of color, black, Latino. We have some Asian poets as well. But when we invited Randall Randolph and I think it was Cameron Brooks that came, and it was me, Candace, and Jennifer Bartel, who's from here. It just felt so scary because we were like, well, we can either do generic feel-good poems, or we can do what we do and what we tell people to write about their experience, write about their pain, write about their struggle, and let's just do it. So the first poem I did was a poem about black girls where, you know, I yell out, I know black girls, and I just list out things that they do that are not stereotypical. And it was an homage to my children and my sister friends. And I said, I'm going to start with that poem, and we'll work our way back.
And I'll tell you, the evening that I was there, it was well received. People were there because they knew they knew what they were going to be getting. And there's so much so much passion in what you guys do when you go up to read your poetry and the expression that it has.
Yeah.
I was just floored. I thought it was wonderful.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Well, I'm glad that it was received that way. We got a lot of comments and hugs, and people just were so excited to see us. And then, like I said, I'm really grateful. We're really grateful that they kept the conversation going with Candace up at Clemson, and we got a chance to be a part of this year's. This year, we did a slam invitational. We modeled it after golf invitational, whereas we want the top of the top to come. And so we had it curated by a sister friend of ours who is in the slam community. Slam poetry is a planet in and of itself in poetry, and we didn't want to presuppose that we knew what we were doing. So what we did was we had it curated by Wendy Jones, wonderful woman in the slam community, and she put together six of the, was it, almost 10 of the best poets in the country that are on TV shows, Versus and Flow, and HBO and things like that. And she put together that list for us, And we ended up giving them a 3-round slam that was for the best of the best.
Wow, you know? That's
amazing.
It was
a beautiful thing.
That's great. Well, one of the things about the watering hole that I wanted you to talk a little bit about, because you said you offer continuing education, what does that entail, and where can people find out about that?
Sure. So adult-wise, what we have is we have a fellowship cohort, if you will, a fellowship in Santee, South Carolina, every year from December 26th to the 30th. We do the same thing every year at Santee State Park. For 5 days, we lock poets in cabins and we make them write.
Wow.
We bring facilitators in from all over the country, sometimes all over the world, and we have them come in, and we keep our price modest, which is not it doesn't often happen in the literary community, where you can get to go to a retreat for less than $1,000. Our retreat is 5 days. It sits around the price point of $300 to $500, and we give you the best poets in the world. We have workshops happening all day for the poets that are of color, and then we have lectures and talks that are public that we let the newspapers, Post and Courier, and the Orangeburg paper, and then the Santee paper as well. We let them know that we're in town and that we have these great world-renowned artists come in and do craft talks and public lectures in partnership with the South Carolina Arts Commission. And when you finish 3 of 5 years, you have 5 years to finish 3 retreats, and then you become a graduate fellow of the Watering Hole.
Oh, wow. That's wonderful.
Yeah, it's amazing. We've had, I really get to brag now. Our first year, we had Tayemba Jess, who just won the Pulitzer Prize this year.
Wow.
Yeah, we've had Nikki Finney come and do our keynote address, National Book Award winner Nikki Finney. And this year, we have Danez Smith, who just got longlisted yesterday for the National Book Award. We've had some really... Frank X. Walker, Poet Laureate of Kentucky, founder of the Afro-Latian Poets. We've just really had some serious
workers. Well, you mentioned Nikki Finney, who is now back in South Carolina. So we're so happy to have her. And I had the privilege of being able to induct her into the South Carolina Academy of Authors. And the way I did it was with a poem. So I really, really should not have done that. But it was a lot of fun.
A beautiful thing.
It was great.
So funny. I've pulled her on stage before with a poem, but not to that level. You're brave.
It turned out okay. But anyway, those are some amazing names that you've gotten and some amazing stuff that you're doing. And tell us a little bit about how you're organized with the Watering Hole. Is it a 501c3 nonprofit? And how do you get your funding?
Well, we get our funding through different grants. A lot of times, and what I about our programming, back to our programming, we also do poetry throughout the community for the public, for anybody to come. And it's mostly for kids and teens. And then we have some writing workshops that happen throughout the year. We get our funding from doing camps, and the Arts Commission has really been a big partner with us. And then we get private donations. We have on our website a way for you to donate at twhpoetry.org if you'd like to donate. We provide a year-long programming. We're just about to launch Teen Poetry Guild at the Maine Richland County Library. That'll happen once a month every second Saturday. We're open to do programming at any library or school that we get funding like that. And then Candace and I go around and lecture and teach workshops, and we just have a percentage that we put into the Watering Hole and a percentage that we take out as a facilitator.
Okay, so since this is Library Voices SC, how have you worked with libraries in the state, or can libraries just contact you and say, like, if they want to do a program or something at their library?
Yeah, so we are open, like I said, twhpoetry.org, and you can write us at twhtribe@twhpoetry.org. You can send us any of your requests. We're happy to. We provide a lot of programming that has to do with STEAM with children, We do things like we teach about composting, and then we show you how to compost a poem. We teach about architecture, and then we talk about the structure in things like pontoons and small things like haikus. We have a lot of programming available for children and teens, and then for women and men, for grown people, we have beautiful work, memoir work that we do, workshops that we do on memoir, workshops that we do about just speaking about what happened in your family and what's happening in your community. We love to write about community.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Very cool. You've got some great stuff going on.
Thank you.
One of the other things that I wanted to talk about with you, and this is something that's coming up very soon, mm-hmm. which is Banned Books Week. And yes. The theme is Banned Books Week, Celebrating the Freedom to Read, and that's the week of September 24th through the 30th of 2017. And I'm just going to read a little bit from the American Library Association. This is what they say about Banned Books Week. Mm-hmm. By focusing on efforts across the country to remove or restrict access to books, Banned Books Week draws national attention to the harms of censorship. The books featured during Banned Books Week have all been targeted with removal or restrictions in libraries and schools. While books have been and continue to be banned, part of the Banned Books Week celebration is the fact that in a majority of cases, the books have remained available. This happens only thanks to the efforts of librarians, teachers, students, and community members who stand up to speak out for the freedom to read. Banned Books Week is an annual event celebrating the freedom to read. Typically held during the last week of September, it highlights the value of free and open access to information. Banned Books Week brings together the entire book community, librarians, booksellers, publishers, journalists, teachers, and readers of all types, in shared support of the freedom to seek and to express ideas, even those some consider unorthodox or unpopular. So just having read that, what are your thoughts about banned books and book challenges?
I was just really surprised. First, I want to say, when I looked at what was what were in the list of banned books from the past, I think about my children's lives and even my life and my sister's lives without Harry Potter. Like, I think about
exactly.
Like how important that is for conversation and imagination and just how important that series was to my is still to my family. If we want to just kind of sit in all weekend, we all sit around and do every single Harry Potter movie. I can't imagine J.K. Rowling's voice not being a part of my family, you mm-hmm, know. Mm-hmm. I also think about I Am Jazz now. When you think about all these books that are on the list now that have been challenged, they are mostly, and you know, not to say that there's some sort of discriminatory practice. I don't want to go as far as to be, you know, go that far. But a lot of the books are about the LGBT community, mm-hmm. and I wonder if people knew how much conversation happens in the world of authors about having the bravery, about being brave enough to write LGBT books.
Exactly.
And how many write under surnames, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. so that they're not connected to the LGBT community, because that's how much of the fear is that you'll be considered the gay author. Mm-hmm. That it's really bad enough that we have to sometimes pick up another name and pen under another name in order to make sure that our name stays clear of the LGBT, you know, umbrella. And also the publishing houses and how brave they are.
Exactly.
In publishing these books. Uh-huh. It's just crazy. And then now they have a voice, uh-huh. you know. And now children who don't understand the LGBT community can pick up something to understand it, the way that they could pick up something to understand civil rights, the way that they could pick up to understand women's rights or a war, mm-hmm. you know, and things like that. Tell me about this war. Well, let's go to the library and get a couple of books. Tell me about, what does LGBT mean? Let's go mm-hmm. to the library and talk about it mm-hmm. and read something on your grade level.
Right, exactly. Yeah, it's It really is interesting because, you know, when you look back over the years of the American Library Association at their website, and we'll post links to mm-hmm. not only the Watering Hole, but also about Banned Books Week mm-hmm. On the Library Voices SC podcast website. But mm-hmm. When you look back over the top 10 book challenges for every year in the past, it's amazing to see what's out there. I went back a few years, and of course, 50 Shades of Grey, you know, that was on it when it came out. Mm-hmm. You know, you think of things like that, but you mm-hmm. also think of things like Tom Sawyer and Huckleberry Finn, oh, yeah. you know, all these kinds of things where, yes. You know, and you look back, we talked earlier before we started recording about, mm-hmm. you know, civil rights and the mm-hmm. civil rights movement in the 60s and 70s.
Yes.
And, you know, a lot of things that people are scared of mm-hmm. tend to be what gets banned.
Yes.
And, you know, right now with the transgender movement, it's something that's been around for quite some time, but mm-hmm. is just now, you know, has been politicized. And mm-hmm. So we're starting to see book challenges, and a lot of them are LGBT. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that you had mentioned mm-hmm. Was seeing the Little Bill series on this list.
Oh. I was like, what did Little Bill do to anybody? And then it just said that one line because of the author. Mm-hmm. Sexual allegations of the authors.
Yep, and this is the Little Bill series that was written by Bill Cosby.
Yes.
And that's a tough one.
That's a tough one, right? It really is a tough one.
It really is hard.
Because do we not dance to music written by people who are sexual? I was thinking about Roman Polanski. I was thinking about Woody Allen. I was thinking about, like, and yeah, it's. I was also looking at earlier patrons and parents, the ones who are responsible for challenging the books. Mm-hmm. I was looking at the parents, and I was thinking, these are the same parents that possibly would love a Woody Allen movie. And my family, we own the Cosby Show mm-hmm. series. Mm-hmm. We own that box set. Mm-hmm. And my children watch it for hours because they need to know.
Oh, yeah, I watched it all the time.
You know, where their mom, what entertained their mom when
exactly.
I was little.
Exactly.
It's scary to think that we could do that. And but it also, how do you talk about it without saying what he's being accused of? You know, art is universal and it comes out of everybody, even people who make mistakes, I believe. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And the art should not suffer, I don't mm-hmm, think. Mm-hmm. I don't think the art should suffer.
Yep, I agree. That's a good philosophy. Mm-hmm. Some of the statistics about mm-hmm. where books are challenged, 49% is public libraries, 30% is schools, 20% is school libraries. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you see those numbers, and you also, we've got some diagrams here mm-hmm. in our podcast studio, and you look about who is challenging books, mm-hmm. and luckily government is very low on the list.
Right.
You know, because you think of other countries who don't have the same freedoms that we do here mm-hmm. in the United States, and it's really difficult. It's a difficult topic to address.
It is. Also, I was thinking about the fact that yeah, because then in other countries, you just would never see the book. You would never know it existed at all.
Nope.
Now, it would never be translated. But I remember the war happening in the schools. I have twins that are 11 and a 9-year-old. And I remember, I believe we were in Kershaw County for a year after the flood. And I remember Captain Underpants was such a big issue.
I don't know about Captain Underpants.
Captain Underpants, I believe that there's something LGBT in Captain Underpants, but Captain Underpants was being challenged, and now it's a movie. But that's a big book that everybody loves. They love it like The Dork Diaries. I mean, they love Captain Underpants. I have to find out but I know it's been challenged really hard, and I believe it's because one of the male characters is gay. I'm not positive. I have to look that one up, but I think Captain Underpants has been challenged. And I'm like, well, this is what, you know, when they say, if your child's not a reader, let them read whatever. Mm-hmm. And that'll, you know, and just write down what they read. Mm-hmm. As opposed to when we were younger, you would have to read this one thing. I remember Roll of Thunder, Hear My Cry. Everybody has to read that book. But my daughter is reading, my 9-year-old just finished the book Smile. And she finished another book yesterday that I had no clue she even had. But it's like, okay, well, put that in your log, please. Because I don't even know when you're reading now. I don't know what you're reading now. Mm-hmm. Things like Captain Underpants have a following, such a big following in young boys and girls. I don't know if we should just be letting them read because they're reading. And some of these books I was looking, this one, Makes Something Up, Stories You Can't Unread. Mm-hmm. I'm curious to see, though, I see that it has sexually explicit words, mm-hmm. disgusting, and all around offensive. It would make me open it to find out who offensive to who.
Exactly.
Offensive it does. To who.
Yeah. Ian, you talked a little bit about, you know, maybe not knowing exactly what your daughter's reading at the time. And it's very hard to, you know, if you have mm-hmm. children who are readers, you know, and they are able to get to their school library or their public library and check mm-hmm. out what they want. You know, it's a difficult thing to do. I'm not a parent, so mm-hmm. I can't really relate, but I imagine it would be, you know, I think I would be happy that my child is reading. Period. Mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But you also, when you mentioned earlier, we're talking about poetry, and mm-hmm. you know, it makes me think about Kwame Alexander and what he's doing yes. with you know, when he started out doing mm-hmm. Book in a Day,
yeah.
and that program with students, the poetry, you know, mm-hmm. the active part of creating the poetry and creating a book. Mm-hmm. falls into that, you know, how to pull in mm-hmm. reluctant readers.
Right.
So poetry has a big deal in that aspect.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about working with poetry with students?
I love to find things like, I think it's Terrence Hayes that has some on basketball. There's a poet that has a big book on basketball. We read a few of those poems with some of the young kids this summer. I worked with a basketball camp this summer.
Oh,
I taught the literary arts part of a basketball camp. So if you can imagine keeping kids that want to be playing basketball and holding them in a room and saying, okay, let's
now talk
we're
gonna
about
talk about basketball.
So I just try to pull in poems that would appeal to them.
Mm-hmm.
I also really, you know, it's kind of a trick I do with these little poets is that I start with a free write because they think a free write is, I'm just going to write whatever I want.
Mm-hmm.
Or they get intimidated and think I'm asking them to write an essay. And I'm like, no, whatever comes to your mind on this subject, let's go, just write it down.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then it's almost like you teach them the art of the erasure poem in that you're telling them we'll take some things away and then let's form this and then let's count your syllables and maybe we can come up with a haiku out of this. I think with children and poetry, you really, as an educator, have to go and find enough out there in the spectrum and bring it back to them and say, does any of this catch your eye?
Mm-hmm.
And if so, okay, now we've got a subject. Let's work from here. We also bring in a lot of songs.
Mm-hmm.
I did something down at the Eastover Library where we talked about Lauryn Hill's song. It wasn't even Lauryn Hill's song. Roberta Flack's song,
yeah.
one Killing
of my,
Me Softly.
One of my favorite remakes
right?
by Lauryn Hill.
By Lauryn Hill, right?
Oh, yeah.
But I had them draw the poem.
Oh, okay.
And somebody drew a poem of the man strumming
mm-hmm.
her heartstrings.
Mm-hmm.
And then somebody drew a poem of a big mouth and the little man in the guitar was inside of her mouth, just strumming away.
Mm.
And I was like, see, now you are starting to understand what a poem means by bringing in other tools, such as, all right, let's throw down a bunch of markers and say, okay, let's do a close read of this poem. What's a close read? And I show them what a close read is. I split the poem in half, split the room in half. You do this verse of the song. You do this verse of the song. I want to know what the song is on paper.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big one. That really always, you know, really engages a child. The next time they read a poem,
mm-hmm.
the close read's going to be different because they're going to be doing some imagery, you know, in their head.
Definitely. And that, I mean, uh-huh. I even remember going back to 11th grade English. I had mm-hmm. a great English teacher who, she had us, it was this great exercise. And, you know, it was mm-hmm. like, what are lyrics but poetry? And mm-hmm. so she said, take your favorite song that's out right now, write down all the lyrics, then correct the grammar.
Hmm.
And I was like, oh, wow. That was really cool.
I put it in space.
Yeah.
And now you're looking at
put commas poem. In where you think they should yes. be, you know, and just correct the grammar
yes,
of that. And that had stuck with me, you know.
You got a beautiful poem.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a gorgeous thing. There's so much that poetry can do. But often songs that are really great are talking about some issues that can be banned.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Oh,
that
yeah.
could be looked at as banned. It's very much it's a sad thing that we are always at the mercy of someone else's judgment.
Right,
sometimes,
exactly.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah, so mm-hmm. it's a lot to think about, and we're running down on time.
Mm-hmm.
So is there anything else about either, you know, the Watering Hole, what you do, or Banned Books Week that's coming up that you want to share?
Well, we're definitely going to be putting out some things at the Watering Hole's website and our Facebook page that about Banned Books Week, just in celebration of all the books that have made it through.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, this year we are going to have Dinez Smith, who I know that his books, I think the book that they're looking at for the National Book Award is Don't Call Us Dead.
Mm.
And it's about the racial profiling and the deaths of black people. But his book before that, Black Movie, talked about race,
mm-hmm.
race and gender.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it talked about race and LGBT community.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he really is he's part of the LGBT community. He also talks loudly about race. So I know he would have been challenged, and it's probably is on somebody's challenge list. But most importantly about the Watering Hole this year, our retreat this year brings two poets home. And one is Terrence Hayes,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
who is a wonderful
National
Book Award winner. And he'll be home for this this year's retreat and teaching for us. And also Delana Dameron, who is an MFA graduate out of USC and from
okay.
South Carolina. And
wonderful.
So she is coming home as well.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Well, anything we can do to help promote that sounds like a wonderful program. And
yeah.
thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, thank you for inviting me. This has been beautiful, wonderful talk. I love good dialogue in the morning.
Me too. Thanks.
You're welcome.